Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left after a far too long hiatus from the County Cricket Podcast is none other than my Welsh co-host, Lucy Rees. So Lucy, first things first, mate, it's been a while. First of all, we need to explain why I haven't been on the podcast. And second of all, how's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, my day's been good. Southwest Wales is sunny, which is nice. But yeah, it has been a while.
Yeah, when was your last show?
I think it was the second wrap-up of the T20 Blast.
Crikey, that was June.
It was before I saw Gloucestershire Glamorgan at Bristol.
And Glenn Phillips produced a masterclass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one very, very vividly. What a knock that was. But Lucy, it's fantastic to have you back. And of course, listeners, Lucy will be back for a lot more shows now, producing a lot more content as well for us here at TCCP. So Lucy, first of all, fantastic to have you back and working with us for the rest of the season. But also joining us for today's very special Glamorgan County Cricket Club themed episode of TCCP is none other than Glamorgan CCC wicketkeeper batsman Tom Cullen. So, Tom, again, I'll pose that question to you, mate. How's your day been so far?
Hello, Aaron. Hello, Lucy. Thanks for having me on. It's been brilliant. I mean, the last week have been, a bit of a whirlwind for us. And, you know, to be honest, I think I'm just sobering up, really, over the last couple of days from what happened a week ago.
I know, it's incredible. It's good timing, actually, today's podcast. We've done it exactly 1 week after that incredible final at Trent Bridge. And Tom, we'll obviously discuss this more in depth as the podcast goes on. But just one question. Has it sunk in yet?
Yeah, it's starting to, really. When you look at Glamorgan's history, we don't have as many trophies in the cabinet that we probably should have. So the fact that 17 years ago was our last trophy, it does hit home that, you know, we were able to deliver something that the great Glamorgan teams that we've had over the last 17 years haven't been able to achieve. So, no, it's brilliant. And hopefully it's just now the beginning of something a little bit more fruit for us going forward.
Absolutely, mate. And of course, we will be discussing that incredible day at Trent Bridge in a lot more depth as today's podcast does progress. But before we get into all of that good stuff, Tom, I want to take you back all the way back in time, right to the origin of the Tom Cullen cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
My early memories is growing up in Perth, Australia. Literally just going down. We lived close to the Swan River, which anyone from Perth will know, or anyone that's been to Perth will know. Me and my dad lived like 5 minutes from that river, and we used to go down after school every day, and we had a specific tree that was always the stumps, and we would just play, and we'd just play cricket until the sun went down, really. And he would probably play for a lot longer than he wanted to, it's probably one of my earliest memories and probably one of my fondest, really.
Fair enough. Of course, the Swan River, absolutely gorgeous. Gorgeous. I can't say I've ever been to Perth personally. Lucy, have you been that we don't know about?
Not yet.
Not yet, exactly. Ashes tour, definitely on the bucket list to Optus Stadium. But just one question about that, Tom, right? Because I've heard this from people in Australia, and I'm not sure if you can actually back this up or not. Are there sharks in the Swan River?
No.
There aren't?
I don't know, but I've never heard of a shark getting that far up river. So, no, I don't think so.
Fair enough.
But nobody swims in it either because it's not the greatest water to swim in. So, it's nice to look at, put it that way.
Nice to look at, not so much to go for a dip in. And potentially, who knows, there might be bull sharks in there. We'll have to...
I don't know. I've never swum in there, so I couldn't tell you. But no, I don't think so.
I suppose we'll just have to wait and find that out afterwards. We'll have to get a quick Google search, won't we, Lucy? Find out if there are any sharks in the Swan River. But again, I digress. That isn't very much a cricket question on today's podcast. But talking of Australia, Tom, right, obviously a nation known very much for its cricketers. We've had so many legendary Aussies grace not just the game, but the county game as well over the years. The likes of Glenn McGrath, for example, Matthew Hayden, Justin Langer, Adam Gilchrist. We could go on and on and on about fantastic Aussie cricketers. But in those early days in Perth itself, Tom, who did you look up to in the world of cricket? Who were your cricketing idols and role models in those early years?
Well, there were two of them, really. First of all, it was Ricky Ponting was probably number one, because growing up playing cricket in Australia, you generally, you know, you're taught to play a certain way, and that is, you know, play hard, play fair, and do whatever you can to win. And Ricky Ponting was obviously a captain of a golden era of Australian cricket, where he just epitomised what Australian cricket stood for. And so, you know, he was someone I really looked up to because of the way he played the game. You know, he was always there, up for the contest. When the team needed him the most, he was always standing up and he was delivering for Australia. So, you know, that's somebody you want to idolise yourself and you want to play in the way that he played the game, essentially. So, and then the second one was obviously Adam Gilchrist, because he changed the way wicketkeepers were thought of. You know, no longer was it about just catching balls. You know, you had to be able to fill a batting role within the team. And again, you know, he was somebody who was very consistent, very, very hardworking. And you could just see in his performances how good he was. So, you know, I mean, those were my two idols, and probably thousands of other kids' idols from my age and generation, no doubt.
100%. Yeah, both Aussie legends in their own rights. Absolutely. Adam Gilchrist, not only did he play some brilliant cricket, also very much played in the spirit of cricket. That's what I personally liked about Adam Gilchrist. Great, great sportsman, as well as a real innovator in the game of cricket. As you said, he was the model of the wicketkeeper batsman as we know it today. When you see the likes of a Quinton de Kock, for example, or a Joss Butler, or even some of the younger guys coming up in county cricket as well, they're very much modelled around the basis of Adam Gilchrist. So definitely one of the game's greatest ever keepers. And then, of course, Ricky Ponting, as we know him here in England, the Tasmanian Devil. He definitely, you know, gave us a lot of strife during Ashes series, both home and away. And an absolute rock, wasn't he? I think it was 2009. I think Matt Prior hit a cover drive into his cheek, right? Mm. And he spat out a mouthful of blood and then started, you know, giving it a bit of chirp afterwards. But he carried on. Like, he was
just a competitor. That's the thing I love the most, is just as soon as he stepped on the field of play, he was a real competitor. And the thing to note about Gilly as well is, you know, like, obviously he innovated the game in terms of turning wicketkeepers into batters as well. But he was also a really good gloveman, and it kind of flown a little bit under the radar because of how well he did with the bat. You know, he was a very, very good gloveman. So he almost filled two roles in that team. And that's what obviously maybe cooked a lot of wicketkeepers who were playing at the time or coming through, or even now that, you know, there's a lot of good, great keepers out there that are just good wicket keepers, but, you know, maybe don't bat as well. And obviously they get left behind because of the innovation of the way he changed it. He changed the way wicket keepers were looked at. So, yeah, you hit the nail on the head about both of them.
Absolutely. Yeah, legends. That's the only way that I can personally describe them. Loved both of them. Ponting, not so much during the Ashes. But, you know, outside of the Ashes, you know, when he played for Surrey as well, he was a very, very good overseas signing for the Brown Caps, and obviously a legend of the game, the second leading test run scorer of all time. So some great choices there, Tom. And of course, mentioning Gilly in particular, because he's a wicketkeeper, the model wicketkeeper batsman that we know in the 21st century. What made you become a wicketkeeper? Why did Tom Cullen not become a seam bowler in Australia or just a specialist batsman? What was it about keeping that drew you into the art form in the first place?
Well, when I was really, I only started wicketkeeping when I was about 12, because up until then I bowled seam and I batted. I was a bit of an all-rounder, but I got sick of like not being in the action every ball. I wanted to be involved every single ball. So I think it was like when I was 11, I just picked up a pair of wicketkeeping gloves and I started keeping. And I thought, this is great, because I was in the action every ball. Like if you're in the field, you're running in, you people are throwing it into you. You're chirping the batters. You're constantly engaged in the game. So, and you can influence the game. So as soon as I picked those wicket-keeping gloves up, I never really looked back. I just loved it. And I loved, you know, that aspect of just being engaged all the time and being able to affect the game, even if it's not with the bat.
100%. That's a very, very common answer among wicket-keepers as well. And Tom, with you personally, what is your favourite bit of wicket-keeping? What's your favourite piece of the art form itself? Because I know that you're a very, very good chirper behind the stumps as well. You do like a sledge or two.
I don't mind getting in the contest. I think that is a key part of cricket that you can't forget. You know, I know New Zealand have kind of thrown that out the window, but I'm of the opinion that kind of nice cricket teams don't win things. Nice cricket teams seem to finish second. So I think you've got to have that little bit about you. But no, I just love the fact that you can be able to affect the game at any one point and just change it in an instant, whether that be a leg side stumping, a great catch, you know, a tidy run out, or, you know, or even just galvanizing the guys from behind the stumps. You know, I mean, that, you know, when things get a little bit flat, I think that a wicketkeeper in the field is almost your most important player, because they can affect the game in so many ways other than just, you know, just their skill for just what it is, you know? So, that's basically it, really. I feel like, you know, you're never far away from affecting the game, and that's the most important thing, I think, or I love about wicketkeeping.
I really like that answer. I must admit, very much a field general then, in terms of your approach to wicketkeeping, very much the centre of the team, the nucleus. And as you said, a wicketkeeper can pick a team up in so, so many ways when they're at their worst, for example. Like, if you're getting hammered during a four-day game, as you said, a leg side stumping, a great catch, even just being that morale boost behind the stumps itself, you know, giving the team a lift, it is such an important position. And Lucy, I'm not sure if I've ever actually asked you this. Have you ever tried your hand at keeping?
No, I've actually done a bit of coaching on it, but no, I've never done it myself. But yeah, I agree with Aaron that I really like that answer, the fact that you're always involved. I've never really thought of it as that.
It is. It's such an important position. It really is. And of course, I, as a spinner, I couldn't hack wicket keeping, by the way. Far too physically demanding. And I just don't have the chat. Like, who wants to hear bowling a piano and see if you can play that like 50 times behind the stumps? No one wants to hear that. So I just stuck to spin bowling, right? Because my chat is absolutely dead. It's horrendous. So, yeah, they are very, very important.
I think us wicket keepers, we tend to be a certain type of person, I think. So that's fair enough. It's not for everyone, but I think most wicket keepers are a different breed of individual or character. So that's probably why.
100%. It's the same in football with goalkeepers. And it's funny that you mentioned, I mean, I was a goalkeeper in cricket. I was a goalkeeper in football, sorry. So I suppose I was different in that sense. But wicket-keeping, as you said, they seem to be even more unique. Look at Jack Russell, for example, with his little hat. He didn't brush his teeth before a game as well, you know, just to get into the batsman's head. You do have to be a very, very special individual to be a keeper. But again, it's such an important position, and you cannot underestimate the importance of it in a cricket team. It really, really is a useful position. But Tom, we've mentioned so far in the podcast, okay, a lot about Australia. But of course, we aren't talking here, you know, about the Sheffield Shield. You aren't still in Perth itself. You've come to the UK in the years that followed. So when did that move to the UK first materialise? How did that journey actually take place? What drew you to the UK in the first place?
Well, it's actually a really interesting story, because I grew up playing cricket and football. My granddad was a Scottish international footballer. My dad played professional football in Australia. So I was always cricket in the summer, football in the winter, and I was pretty good at both. In fact, in Perth, I was probably better at football because there wasn't as many good footballers there than I was at cricket. I was probably, you know, like middle to the top end of probably the guys in my age group, but probably the top end of football. So at 17, I made a decision to give up cricket and focus solely on my football. So I played a year in Australia while I finished school. And then I came over to the UK to play football. And I had trials with Southampton Football Club. and got accepted onto their academy for 6 months. So I spent 6 months at their academy, and, you know, thought I was going to be a footballer for the next 10 years of my career. I was in the Southampton Academy. Gareth Bale had just left. Theo Walcott had just left. I thought this was going to be my career. Anyway, 6 months in, I just realized I wasn't good enough. Like, for every good player, for the player I thought I was, there was about 1,000 of those kids over here. So it was about 19. I had 2 years out of the game. So I got released, went back to Australia for 6 months, and then I came back to the UK again. And I thought, bugger it, I'll try cricket again. I thought I'd made a mistake potentially. My dad told me that from when I decided to chase football. He said, you're making a mistake here. So yeah, I basically thought, bugger it. So I went back and I played for a club in London called Hemel Hempstead in Hertfordshire. And I played a season with them. And I actually did pretty well and realised that I was going to be, that maybe I'd obviously made that mistake. And it just kind of went from there, really. I then went to a club in Middlesex called Stanmore, played a season there. And then I flew to New Zealand and played a season there. And then I came back to the UK and I started playing in the West of England League with Potton. And I was about 22, 23. And I ended up then going to uni and went to uni in Cardiff, played cricket there. And then it all just really went from there, really. So, yeah, I mean, I never actually came over to play cricket, funnily enough.
That is staggering. That really, yeah, that has got to be the most unique journey that we've had to playing county, yeah, cricket on the podcast so far. I never knew that. Southampton's academy is prestigious. As you said, the likes, yep, of Gareth Bale, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Theo Walcott, Virgil van Dijk has come through the ranks there as well. My goodness, that is absolutely extraordinary. So we could have been talking to you on a football podcast, basically. Maybe not us two, because,
yeah,
we do county cricket.
No, potentially, yeah, if I was good enough. But no, I wasn't good enough, and I found that out pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's pretty cutthroat, isn't it, the world of football? But I suppose, yeah, you know what, Tom? It worked out, though, didn't it? As we'll mention later, yeah, on in the podcast, you know, you're celebrating silverware this season. But obviously, you know, moving off the city-based questions then, Tom, let's move the conversation on to county cricket, because we haven't really spoken about it yet on the County Cricket Podcast today. And of course, that is a major focus of today's episode. So having grown up in Australia, did you have many opportunities to watch county cricket? And if so, again, what were your first memories of the county circuit?
I didn't really have an opportunity to, I guess, watch it from Australia, but I'd obviously heard about it. I knew there was a lot of teams. I could only name probably a handful back then. I remember my mum saying to me at an early age, she said to me, one day with your British passport, you're going to go and play county cricket. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. It only really became apparent, I guess, the county cricket, how tough, how prestigious, how much history it's baked in. It only really became apparent to me, I guess, when I came over here and actually started to learn about it and follow it and you know, be a fan almost. Before even eventually ended up playing it, I guess.
Fair enough. And in terms of, well, I suppose those formative memories of county cricket, what were the counties that took your eye, Tom?
So the only ones I think back then I only really knew about was Middlesex and Surrey, two of the big London ones, because obviously in London. Even when I first got over here, I don't think I would have known who Glamorgan were. I didn't really have a clue. It was probably the two London ones, really.
I'm sure Matt Maynard loves that answer. Yeah, so going back to that then, what were your first impressions of Glamorgan as a county then?
When I started playing for them back in 2016, 2017, something like that. I walked, I kind of obviously found out it was the only Welsh county on the domestic scene, and I was really impressed by the level of pride for being Welsh that was within the club. And it was something really early on I kind of clocked onto, and I loved about it really was the idea that when you're playing for Glamorgan, you're not representing a county, you're representing a country. And you know, it has so much prestige, or it should have so much prestige around it, that every player that plays for Glamorgan should play, you know, with hoil, with Welsh spirit, with Welsh fire, with play in a way that I guess will make Welsh people proud, because, you know, it is the only Welsh county on the scene. And I guess that was the thing that, you know, I found out very quickly was, you know, the guys who are Welsh within the club are very proud to be a part of the club, and on a deeper level, more so than just a cricketing level.
100%. It's quite unique, isn't it, with Glamorgan? Because, I mean, for me as a Warwickshire fan, obviously, we very much do support our team very, very passionately. But again, that is just one county. It is unique to actually, you know, represent an entire country, as you said. And Lucy, what was that like for you listening to that, obviously? I mean, Tom, adopted Welshman now, as you said in that incredible video after the Trent Bridge success on Twitter. But what is that like to hear?
It's true, obviously. Yeah, you get it with like the minor counties boys as well when they play for Wales. You do look at it in a bigger picture, really, and think, yeah, it's more than a county, especially with, like, you know, you've got the shirt with the Welsh flag on it, and yeah, it's nice.
Well, I think Welsh sport in general, you know, it's a small country compared to a lot of other sporting countries around the world, and I feel like Wales, you know, with all their different sports, they can't rely on pure talent and skill alone. You know, Welsh sport has built themselves around, you know, fighting in the contest and almost scrapping for every result they can get. So cricket, I guess, is no different there. You know, that attitude of, you know, punching above your weight, being the underdog, you know, working hard for, I guess, being the Welsh Dragon, should be at the forefront of the culture of the club, because that is what Welsh sport is all about. And whenever, you know, the Welsh football teams or rugby teams have done well, you know, I don't think anyone can ever say they've ever been a favourite. They've always earned exactly what they've got, just by sheer fight and spirit alone.
100%. That reminds me of 2016, you know, with the Euros, when England got knocked out by Iceland. And suddenly everyone in England had a Welsh uncle, or a Welsh auntie, or a Welsh sister. And suddenly everyone started supporting Wales. It was quite funny, to be fair, that. But no, I agree. Obviously, Wales, they are a very, very proud sporting nation. Obviously, rugby being the, you know, the most popular one, that is the one that Wales are known for. But in cricket and football as well. And as you said, it's about it's that fighting spirit, isn't it? It's punching above your own weight, as they say in the world of sports. It is very, very interesting, Tom. And again, fair play, because obviously you're very much emboldened by those passions, those values, those morals and principles that are based around Glamorgan County Cricket Club.
Yeah, I mean, I come from Australia. We are obviously a very proud sporting nation as it is, and you know, I will be forever grateful to Glamorgan for giving me the opportunity they did that maybe I didn't think I was going to get. So you know, my way of repaying that is trying to adopt that, I guess, that fighting spirit that Wales has built its sporting culture around. And, you know, that's why when I'm on the field of play, especially for Glamorgan, you'll never see me. You'll probably hear me a lot, whether it's annoying or not. But I'll always fight to the very end for the club. And that's got nothing to do with my nationality. That's because, you know, like you say, I've tried to adopt that Welsh spirit, I guess.
I love that. So going back to Glamorgan then, and your like roots going to the club, what do you remember from your debut, and like how proud of one was that for you?
Well, again, it's another really funny story. I was I was playing, I played a couple of games for the seconds and then nothing really accumulated. So I went to Leicester. They offered me a trial there and I ended up scoring a lot of runs for them. And anyway, I was obviously going through my last year of uni and I was captain of the Cardiff scheme and we got to Lords that year. And I remember it was on a Thursday we played the game and we won at Lords that year. And we obviously went out that night because we had an extra night in London, got absolutely steaming, got home at 5 o'clock in the morning on the Friday. The bus was leaving at 11 o'clock the next day. So obviously we all went down to leave. I think it was about, we were stuck in London traffic and it was about 11:30. Anyway, I got a phone call. There was someone from a number I didn't know. And I was so hungover. I was just like, if it's important, they'll leave a message. I'll just ring them back later. Cause I just couldn't be bothered talking to anyone. Cause it was a pretty dusty ride home. Anyway, there was a message come up on my phone saying this person's left a message. So I thought, oh, well, I better listen to it, see what it's about. Anyway, it was Robert Croft. And he said, hi Tom, well done yesterday. I hope you don't mind ringing me, but Chris Cook has gone down concussed at training today. I was wondering if you would like to come and play for us up at Durham in 2 days' time. If that's something that interests you, can you please give me a call back? If that's something that interests me, I rang you back straight away. So I said, hi, Rob, sorry about that, mate. I was my phone was in another room or whatever it was. And yeah, no, I then was rushing around Lord. I had to stop the bus because I was told I had to go back to Lord's to get registered in time because it was a Friday afternoon. So I got off the bus, got the tube across London, was bawling my eyes out, got to Lord's, got registered, then had to get the train all the way home to Cardiff. And then the next day, next morning, I was traveling up to Durham with the boys to make my debut. So it was a really special time. Obviously, to win at Lords for the Cardiff MCCU, but then obviously 2 days later to then be making my debut.
That's a brilliant story. So how did you do in your debut in the end?
We didn't win. I got to two tens. I took four catches in the first innings and then I think one or two in the second. I had a reasonable debut, but more so the experience was unbelievable. I just I loved every minute of it really. It was something that I'd worked for a good 5 years. Made a lot of sacrifices in terms of stability, in terms of job, work, things like that, career. It was a very, very proud experience. I just loved every minute of it.
Well, that is fantastic to hear, Tom. It really is. And again, for us as fans, not just of county cricket, but cricket in general, that's the thing that we don't see, isn't it? It's all the behind the scenes hours, the sacrifice, the unknown battles that we don't get to see. And I suppose it does make that moment that even more special, doesn't it, of course, because you put in all of those hours and hours. And of course, we'll never fully understand that as much as we think we're good at cricket and we think that at times we could maybe do it better than the professionals. We've all been like that, sat at home watching a game and saying, we could have done this better, we could have done that better. But the fact is, it's all of that dedication, the hard work, the behind-the-scenes stuff that sets you up for that moment. And it must be incredibly special. It really, really must be. And Tom, this is going to be a tough question, of course, because, well, 7 days ago, of course, you won your first ever county trophy. But is that Glamorgan debut your proudest moment in a Glamorgan shirt? Or would you say that this year's Royal London One Day Cup final topped that for you personally?
Yeah, that is a really tough one because, I mean, they're both very proud for very different reasons. I don't know. That is a tough question. I can't give you an answer to that. I really can't because I worked so hard to make that debut, made so many sacrifices, but then But then obviously 5 years later, you know, you still make sacrifices and you still work hard and you achieve something else. So, yeah, look, you know, I'm probably going to tip last Thursday just because we've delivered a trophy for the first time in 17 years, you know. That you could see how much it meant to our supporters and fans up there. And that gave me a tremendous amount of joy walking around the boundary and seeing how much it meant to those Welsh people. I think, yeah, because that day was more for Glamorgan and the team, I think I've talked myself into it. That's more prouder than my debut.
Fair enough, Tom. It was an incredibly tough question. Of course, yeah. I don't mind admitting that, but I think that's a really nice answer. And again, showing more about the team and, of course, well, the people that you're representing with Glamorgan. It is a common theme in today's podcast, but you do have to remember that is front and centre when you are representing the entirety of Wales. And those fans that made that trip to Trent Bridge were absolutely fantastic. I mean, I'm guessing you saw the people dressed as daffodils. I remember watching them, the people with the Welsh flags, obviously at the end as well, when you're all lifting the trophy and there's that stand. It was full of Glamorgan fans. Brilliant, brilliant support. And of course, it really does mean the world to them.
You are right. I mean, those people, those people are what Glamorgan County Cricket Club is all about. You know, those fans, those Welsh fans and supporters. And that's why after we lifted the trophy, I took the trophy round and tried to give every single fan that had turned up that Thursday, I tried to give them a chance to kind of share a moment with the trophy. And, you know, a lot of them got photos with the trophy and a lot of them were, you know, got photos with myself and some of the other guys. But, you know, every time we play and every time we step on that field, we have to, because we're representing those people and a country of people, we've got to have those people at the forefront of our mind. And that's the most satisfying thing, is to see those fans making the trip up and having, you know, just as much joy as us for winning something that, you know, we haven't done in a very long time.
100%. And that, again, it's a great answer. It really is. And what a moment. I mean, obviously, I'm not a quote-unquote Glamorgan fan, but 17 years, the 2004 Tote Sport League, Robert Croft was the captain of that side that won the National League in 2004. And you just think this year as well, it's the 100th year anniversary of Glamorgan's first-class status. It's a really, really important year. It's celebrating their centenary as a first-class county, becoming one of the 18 counties in the circuit. And to lift the Royal London One Day Cup, the first One Day Cup in Glamorgan's history, was special. I'm going to be honest, and I have to say that I was celebrating at times with the Glamorgan fans as well, because it really, really was a special moment. And talking of one particular moment, Tom, I suppose we have to talk towards the end of the game. And I'm, of course, referring to the final dismissal. Chris Rushworth being dismissed by Michael Hogan, a man who, of course, again, has had an incredibly fascinating cricketing journey, started 12 years ago, and has really, really kicked on, become an absolute stalwart for Glamorgan ever since. What was going through your head in that moment when you heard the nick and that ball is coming towards you to seal the 2021 Royal London One Day Cup?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because as Michael was running in to bowl that very ball, I just got a feeling down the back of my spine that Rushy was going to nick it. Like I genuinely thought, oh, he's going to nick this. He nicked it. I've never been so watchful of a catch in my life. And then obviously what followed there, you know, was, I've never had a feeling like it in my life. It was well fitting that Hogan was the man to take that wicket, I believe. You know, Hoagie, people need to, one, stop talking about his age, because he is not slowing down anytime soon. Like, he is as good as anybody is in the county game at the moment. And, you know, he has been a great servant to the Glamorgan County Cricket Club, not just as a player, but as a competitor, as a leader in the dressing room, as a voice in the dressing room. You know, he pretty much now bleeds Glamorgan, even though he's from Australia. So, you know, it was a nice way to finish that game.
Absolutely. It was. And Lucy, I know we asked this, funnily enough, on the review show, didn't we? And you recorded a message for us a few days after. But what did that trophy mean to you? Because that's the first trophy you've seen Glamorgan lift. Like, what was going through your head at that moment? How did you actually celebrate the title victory?
It certainly cheered me up because I was on the way back from my under-13s final from Pont de l'Ice, and I'd missed a bit of the end of the game. So I was like, oh, last time I checked, they needed so many off, like 10 overs. And then I was in the car just refreshing my phone. And then I was like, oh my God, they've taken a wicket. Oh my gosh, we've won. My dad was driving. He's like, have we? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, just really excited. And then the whole thing of my under-13s losing just kind of went out my head. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm well happy again now. But yeah, as a Glam fan and a long time Glam fan, yeah, really chuffed to see.
Well, it's understandable, isn't it? 17 years. 17 years. That is absolutely crazy. Like, in the past, it did make me think maybe I shouldn't have moaned about Warwickshire in the past when we won 5 trophies in the 2010s alone. It does make you, you know, sit back and really take it all in. But what a special moment. What was a very, very unique competition. And I suppose, Tom, before we get into, you know, the rest of this season and beyond, just one thing about the Royal London One Day Cup. Of course, there's been a lot of chats. We've had the 100, of course. That's been a massive focus for a lot of people in this year's summer. And for a lot of people, the Royal London One Day Cup did almost take a backseat in this year's, you know, cricketing calendar. What did you make of this year's competition? And in particular, I mean, some of the Glamorgan players who came through the ranks, the likes of Steve Rheingold, Andy Gorvin, for example, Lucas Carey. What did you make of the competition as a whole?
Well, I mean, yeah, like you say, I mean, the 100 was there, and it looks like from all, you know, it was pretty obvious that the 100 was a success. Sorry, my phone just went then. The 100 was obviously a great success. But I don't think, you know, it shouldn't deter away from the magic of the one day comp that's been around for a very long time. You know, obviously it unearthed a lot of players this year. It gave players opportunity. You know, there was obviously a bit of chat around it being, you know, a development competition or a second 11 competition. Well, you try telling that to the boys that played it, and you go telling that to the two guys in the final, and you go telling that to the guys who made the quarterfinals. You know, we had some terrific games of cricket, us and a lot of other games, especially in the other group. There were some terrific games of cricket. You know, we've got to be careful that we don't lose that. We don't leave it behind, because, you know, it has its own magic about it. So, and you know, some guys will sink, some guys will swim with the opportunity they get. But I mean, that's just the nature of the game. So, I thought it was a great success alongside the 100. I hope it continues, and I'm sure it will.
Fair enough. Good answer, that. I mean, personally speaking, as many people know, I'm not the biggest fan of the 100, right? It doesn't appeal to me in the way that the T20 Blast does, for example, or county cricket. But this year's Royal London One Day Cup, as different as it was, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I absolutely loved it. Over 100 players made their List A debuts in this year's competition. And as you said, Tom, so, so many brilliant performances from young players, from experienced veterans as well. It really seemed to have a mix of all of these players just coming together and producing an absolute show for us as county cricket fans. And that final was brilliant. Of course, you know, some people mentioned about the scheduling. It was on a Thursday. Should have been on a Saturday, let's be honest, in order to, you know, maximise the crowd and attendance figures. But what a day of cricket. What a fantastic final that was between Durham and Glamorgan. Have got two very, very good sets of fans as well. Sides which, let's face it, heading into the competition, also weren't chalked on favourites. I don't think many people, myself included, would have said it would have been a Durham-Glamorgan final, but happy to be proven wrong, and it was a fantastic game of cricket. It really was, and congratulations, of course, to yourself, Tom, and of course Glamorgan for lifting the trophy. What an incredible achievement that was for the Welsh County. But I suppose heading into the remainder of this season, Tom, what are, I don't know, well, I suppose your goals, first of all, and I suppose also the team's goals, because no longer in the T20 Blast, Finals Day, of course, is coming up. Whoever goes through that, we'll find out in the next 2 days. But in terms of Super September, Division 2, it's going to be a pretty tough group. Okay, you don't have to play Northants, of course, but you've still got the likes of Surrey, still got the likes of Gloss, and then, of course, from my group, you've got Durham and Essex. What are your aspirations heading into the rest of the 2021 season and beyond?
It goes back to, every time you stick on that Glamorgan shirt, you know, you should play with a sense of pride, or you should play in a way that you're going to make these Welsh people proud, win, lose or draw. So, you know, the next four games, whether I play or not, it's about, I guess, you know, giving it everything you got and finishing the season strong. We've now won something. So we've got a springboard now to really try and kick on. That ultimately has to be the aim now for the rest of the season, finishing it strong, and then, you know, pushing on to next year and the year after that, you know, almost trying to create a little era, a little mini era around Glamorgan cricket. And that might not mean winning things, but it'll, you know, hopefully it means competing for titles, competing for quarterfinals, you know, trying to be in contention for competitions towards the late stages of it, and you know, really, you know, really pushing this win we had from last Thursday into something that, you know, we can be proud of looking back in 10 years when we're all finished and we're doing something else. So, you know, that's pretty much it. It's just keep moving forward, and trying to play in a way that make our fans and supporters very proud.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tom, I think it goes without saying, but of course, myself and Lucy here at the County Cricket Podcast, wishing both yourself, mate, and of course, Glamorgan, the very, very best of luck, not just into Super September, but of course, the years that follow. Because as you said, if this could be a catalyst, not necessarily for an era of dominance in county cricket, but as you said, an era of positivity, you know, being in contention, making finals, for example, producing more good young players. I'll tell you what, the future of Glamorgan County Cricket Club could be very, very bright indeed. And personally speaking, I know Lucy is a Glamorgan fan. You'll obviously want that as well. But I think from a county cricket perspective, you know, as a whole as well, I think that would be really, really good for the game. So wishing yourself, Tom, and of course Glamorgan, the very, very best of luck heading into the rest of this season and, of course, the years that follow. But before we end today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast, Tom, we do, of course, have teammates, okay? Our, you know, tongue-in-cheek way of ending every single episode. So basically, for any new listeners out there who don't know what TCCP Teammates is, basically in front of us, myself and Lucy, we've got a selection of questions for Tom to answer about the teammates that he shares a dressing room with at Sophia Gardens. So Tom Cullen, are you ready for TCCP Teammates?
Let's do it.
Good answer. First question. This is always a classic here on TCCP. Who is the teacher's pet down in Glamorgan? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, Dan Douthwaite. He loves, got to be it.
Fair enough. Fun fact about Dan Douthwaite, our first ever professional cricketer on the podcast, episode 3.
Yeah, I know. I knew that as well.
Yeah, so who is Mr.
Hard as Nails? Oh, do you know what? I'm probably going to say David Lloyd. I wouldn't want to upset him.
Fair enough. He's a lovely bloke, though. Again, he's someone else who's on the podcast. But I suppose
he is one of the most undercover competitors you'll ever come across. He's a lovely fella off the field, and he plays the game in the right way on the field. But he is a real competitor underneath that kind of external exterior. So, yeah.
Yeah, you get that a lot in the game, don't you? You know, it's the quiet, reserved ones that you have to watch out for on the field, isn't it? Because at any time, they are the competitors, the little scrappy bulldogs, as we call them here on TCCP. Moving on to our next question then, Tom. Very much music-orientated, this question. Who's the dressing room DJ at Sophia Gardens, and what are the choices of songs?
Well, probably been me, probably over the last 4 weeks, probably me. And then whenever I'm playing, I tend to get on the decks. I take the initiative. But if it's not me, it's probably Andrew Salter. He likes to play his house classics. But other than that, it's either me or Salts or Mark Walton. He in the coaching staff, he loves to play his 80s classics. So that seems to get the boys up and about. But probably one of us three.
Well,
I tend to go for a bit more. I go for a bit of everything. I think a lot of the time the guys tell me to turn it off or skip it, skip to the next song. So, yeah.
Well, I was just about to ask something along the lines of that. Who do you say is the best out of you three?
Probably Andrew Salter's the most consistent. Mark Walton comes with some great 80s power hours. I'm well down at number three on that list.
Sticking with the music theme then, who is the karaoke king?
The karaoke king. Oh, geez. We got some terrible ones. Probably going to go with Nick Selman on that one, only because he is really well renowned for singing Mr. Brightside by the Killers and will not, you know, there never is a night that goes by that he doesn't play it or he doesn't sing it or he doesn't request it or, yeah. That's probably why.
It is a classic, to be fair. And I have to ask your two opinions on this. Is it a good song or not? I mean, it's very controversial. There seems to be a split in terms of you either love it or you hate it.
I think it's a classic. Brian, I'm a massive Killers fan, so that's probably why.
Tom, what about yourself?
Yep, agreed. Probably the bar or the nightclub that I used to frequent when I was a bit of a young fella, used to always come on about 2 o'clock in the morning. So it always used to kick us on a little bit further.
Hey, fair enough. I respect you two for that. I also find it an absolute classic. So all in agreement there. Mr. Brightside, absolute tune. Definitely a classic here in England and Wales. It's a UK anthem. Let's face it, to be honest, everyone knows it. But of course, I'm not going to, you know, frighten everyone with my terrible singing voice and do a rendition of it now. So we'll move swiftly on. So Tom, moving on to our next one, the first of our real cricket orientated questions, this one. Who's the most likely to get timed out during a game?
Likely to get timed out. That's a great question. Probably Kieran Carlson. And that's because this season he's now, before he bats, he's tried to relax, tried to help himself relax a lot more. And it's obviously helped with his cricket, but he tends to now go to sleep when he's the next man in, or he reads a book on his audiobook, or he listens to music. But what he does is he doesn't go and watch the game. So if none of us tell him he's in, he would get timed out. There you go.
Hopefully that never happens for the sake of...
No, well, the way he's been playing this year, it's not going to happen because we want him to get out there and bat.
That'd be horrible during a game, wouldn't it? Someone forgets to tell him. Everyone's thinking, where on earth is Kieran Carlson? He's just meditating in the back.
Yep.
Oh, there my goodness.
Now, there's already a lot of contenders for this. Who's the biggest badger?
Badger. Do you know what? We don't have a lot of badgers in our cricket dressing room, believe it or not. Cricket badgers. I'll probably go in myself, really, because I don't think we don't have many badgers in that dressing room. I don't know. Probably myself, because I'm a bit of a cricket badger and probably get, I'll just have to go with myself there. I can't throw anyone under the bus because we don't really have him.
Well, in that case, Tom, and this is TCCP tradition, if you say yourself for the cricket badger, can you tell us a random cricket stat that you know?
Random cricket stat?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found out a stat the other day about Haseeb Hameed, that it was something like 1,000 days since he played for England. And that was the last 100 opening partnership they had.
Very good. I also saw that. That was from Wisdom, wasn't it? It was with him and Alistair Cook in 2016.
That is a cracking stat, that one. Mm. Cracking stat.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks. He is a certified badger. Usually when someone says themselves, they don't actually give us a stat. So, Tom Cullen, well done. You definitely are worthy of the biggest badger award then, down into Pye Gardens. Thank you for that stat. It was a cracking stat, to be fair. As a fellow cricket badger, whoa. Absolutely top stuff, that. Moving on to our next one. This isn't cricket orientated, but you are going to have to throw someone under the bus or a couple of people, depending on their dress sense. Who are the best and worst dressed? in the Glamorgan dressing room?
Okay, yeah, well, it's really easy. Who's the worst? It's either Nick Selman or Lucas Carey, because they always wear, when you go out for a beer, they wear the exact same clothes. They have like one outfit, I guess, that they go out in. Yeah, it ain't great, to be honest. So they'll be in that category. The best dressed, I'm going to have to name two again. It's either going to have to be Callum Taylor or Prem Sisodia, because they invest a lot of money into their gears, and they always look outstanding when we go out for a beer down the pub or when we're in casual clothes. They have all the nice trendy clothes that I guess us mere mortals don't have. So yeah, it's them too.
I'd agree with that, you know, in particular with Prem. If I was to describe his dress sense, I'd go sharp. That's how I describe
Prem. That's it. They're always looking sharp. They've always got new clobber on. Yeah, they love that kind of image. So yeah, can't go past him.
Nah, good answer that. Fair play, I can definitely see that.
Dressing room joker, who's always, you know, cracking jokes, playing pranks.
I tell you what, it's probably got to be Kieran Carlson. He's always up for a dressing room joke or a bit of bant. Marnus Labuschagne is also one as well. He's a little dark horse joker as well. He loves to play a prank on a few people. So yeah, probably them too.
Just on the topic of Marnus, we could have asked this earlier, right?
Yep.
But for those who know Marnus and know of him, of course, he's quite an eccentric character. He's a very unique character in the world of cricket. Absolutely eats, sleeps, breathes the game. Tom, what were your first impressions of Marnus Labuschagne? I'd love to know this.
My first impressions of him was, firstly, I thought, geez, this guy's going to be good to start with. But in terms of like his overall demeanour, you know, it was almost like a 13-year-old cricketer in a 24-year-old's body. You know, like he just loves cricket, like eats, sleeps, breathes it. Changing room cricket. He's the first to get the, as soon as we're off the field for rain, we're playing changing room cricket and he's heading it up. You know, so, I mean, that's his love for the game is just like unsatiable. Mm. So, I mean, that was my first impression of him. You know, who is this 12-year-old? But he's turned out to be pretty handy.
He most certainly has. He's absolutely class. I mean, Lucy, you love Marnus as well, don't you?
Yeah, he gives off that impression. I feel like if I just told him, oh, do you want to go for a net? He'd be like, yeah, let's go. He just loves cricket.
Yeah, like literally, like he will, yeah. If you asked him to go for a net, he would go for a net. he just loves it. If you were willing to throw balls to him for an hour, you'd be wandering down to the nearest net facility.
Now, he's a little legend, isn't he, Marnus? I must admit, yeah. I really like him. But now he's an absolute gun, isn't he, Marnus Labuschagne? And I'm really happy for him. As you said, for someone who absolutely loves the game like that, no, it's very, very good to see. And he's a lovely little character, isn't he, Marnus, down in Glamorgan. But I'm not sure.
He's also another one is that he's a serious competitor as well. Like don't let that facade, don't let it fool you. He when he gets on the field of play, he's a serious competitor.
Absolutely. Well, he's got the perfect mix, hasn't he? He's a South African-born Aussie. I mean, you'd expect him to be like that. And again, he works for him. He's absolutely fantastic. Love Marnus. Absolutely love him. Can't wait to see him back in the county circuit, to be honest. But I'm not sure whether or not he'll be in this next category, Tom. You might be, though, because it's funny you mentioned Southampton earlier. Who's the best footballer down at Sapphire Gardens?
Not me anymore. No. We have a few decent footballers. David Lloyd, even Michael Hogan's not bad for some reason. He's not a bad footballer. Probably have to go with David Lloyd. He's a big Wrexham fan, and I think he played football growing up. So I think he's got to take it. He's a handy footballer. Michael Hogan, probably a close second, or maybe myself.
In fact, we didn't ask this. What position did you play?
So, I was a centre midfielder who drifted out to the wing. So I actually was a centre midfielder going over to the UK, and then I ended up out in the left wing for Southampton.
Oh, wow. It's an interesting move.
Yeah. Well, I don't know at that point. what they saw, but it wasn't good enough a couple of months later.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Tom, end of the day, I think you made the right choice. Remember, without that, wouldn't be here on the County Cricket Podcast talking about Glamorgan. So, hey.
No.
It all worked out.
I don't regret anything. Regret is, there's no point doing it. I think it might have made me, because I may have worked that bit harder in my early 20s to get to where I've got now. So to obviously try and make up for those 2 years. So no, I don't regret anything.
Good attitude, that. Yeah, very, very good outlook to have on life, that. Talking of regret, though, this final question may have a little bit to do with that. So Lucy, take it away. It is an absolute classic.
Last one, most likely to appear on Love Island.
Who's most likely to appear on Love Island? Oh, great question. That is a great, great question. Callum Taylor. Callum Taylor by an absolute country mile. His image, his self-image, he is so mindful of it. He, you know, his body and his hair and everything's got to be perfect. So I could definitely, definitely see him on Love Island, just loving it.
Hey, fair enough. ITV, if you're listening, get in contact with Callum Taylor's representatives. Give him a quick message on Insta. Let's sort it.
He can just take a 4-week hiatus, get on Love Island, have a good time, and then come back refreshed and score runs again for us.
Do you reckon he'd win? Do you think he'd have a good opportunity? I mean, I'm not exactly sure how you win it, but
I think I'd back him to play the game. I would back him to play the smart game.
Well, there we go, folks. When you see Callum Taylor on Love Island in a couple of years' time, you'll know why. It's because of this episode of the Count Cricket Podcast.
Yep.
Brilliant. Well, Tom, I think that is a fantastic way to end what's been a thoroughly engrossing episode of TCCP. So before we end today's episode, mate, do you just have anything to close up on? Any social media channels to plug or promote, for example?
No, not at all. Just, thanks for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure of an hour. And I look forward to hearing some of the guests you have on in the future, because I have listened to some in the past. So it's been great.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. Of course, that means a lot to us. And thank you for all the support, mate. As you know, we love you at TCCP. And it's been fantastic talking to you today about all things County Cricket and Glamorgan. Been a really, really interesting episode. And as you know, mate, always welcome back on here at the County Cricket Podcast with myself, Lucy, and of course, Joe Nutsy Nuttall, who wasn't here today, but is here in spirit, as always, at TCCP HQ. But that is it from us three here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.